Moncrief on News Talk.
It's three words. Thanks, Matt Remick. That's all I want you to put in there.
You don't understand. I have practiced this in the mirror a million times. I can't change it now. It's perfect. I start genuinely shocked, then get very humble, become overwhelmed with gratitude, and start crying. Then I compose myself, give a big thanks to Team Open, and that's it.
This movie would not exist if it wasn't for me. I greenlit it. You and me, we are Team Open.
You can't possibly believe that.
I do!
Oh my God, that is so bad.
Dude, shut the man.
That's The Studio. There are new episodes every Wednesday on Apple TV Plus. James Dempsey's with us once again. Like loads of clips of this online already. And a kind of a general sense of Seth Rogen really loves Hollywood and all this kind of stuff. Does that come through?
Yes, definitely. And not only does he clearly really love Hollywood, but he must be an easy to work with person because there are so many cameos from various people he has worked with in the past.
Mm.
And I really reflected on the fact that, like, you know, there was this like period in the noughties where Seth Rogen was part of, you know, I was trying to come up with like a Brat Pack style thing, but I just couldn't write. So like the Stoner Brat Pack is what I'm going with.
Yeah, that's fair
weak,
enough.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's really the last one standing because like, where's James Franco these days?
Yeah.
Mired in a lot of controversy.
I think, yeah, a lot of them got cancelled, really.
Yeah, right. And here is Seth Rogen still standing and somewhat definitely thriving, right? So he co-created this along with Evan Goldberg. And I think a lot of credit to his success is also due to Evan Goldberg, who was his childhood friend and has been his like co-creator in many, many of the things he's been involved with. He's directed him, he's written scripts for him. They wrote Superbad together, all that. I mean, they came up together, shall
yeah.
we say. But then the other kind of names attached, like when, you know, when I would normally see five names attached as the creators, I would think, oh God, right? But like the other creators also wrote on Veep. So there's good pedigree here. And this is a really enjoyable satire of Hollywood, right? So Seth Rogen plays Matt Remick, who is basically made the head of a kind of failing but grandiose old Hollywood studio called Continental Studios. And he takes over the role from his mentor, played by Catherine O'Hara, who then they have to rope back in the first episode as well, in a very scene-stealing moment. And what I liked about it is, I mean, the second episode is a pure example of this, but like they're going for these long, continuous, frenetic, chaotic takes.
Yes. And yeah. Isn't the second episode just one take?
The second episode is the Oneer,
yeah.
which is the industry name of that. I mean, kind of funny that it's happening so close after adolescence, you know, basically that became the calling card of that show. And here we have this yet again, right? 2025, the year of the Oneer. Not every scene, not every episode is that, but like in the other episodes, it's undeniable that there are these long, continuous takes, and you know you have to really admire the bits of what's improvised in the moment versus what is absolutely meticulously rehearsed. Though I do sometimes think like we absolutely, you know, glorify this Oneer as if it's such as a play. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like I know there's a bit more, there's a lot more technical feat to it than that, but like I've also seen a play.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, essentially. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. But basically, the first episode sees him take over the studio and have to deal with the studio boss, who's played by Bryan Cranston, wanting him to make a movie out of Kool-Aid, the you know, the drinks brand, and him as a kind of not like he's an executive, so he's not the auteur, but clearly he loves film in this and he wants to make grandiose, important films. He wants to make cinema, shall
yes,
we say,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And instead he's making movies and trying to like balance these things with an hilarious moment from Martin Scorsese, who's in it for two scenes. What I will say is like, while it's packed full of cameos and lots of people are playing themselves, we heard in the clip Zoe Kravitz playing herself, but lots of people are playing themselves, but some people are playing obviously fictionalized people as well. It really understands excellently how to make use of those kind of stunt cameos, because I mean they don't feel like a stunt in this, because obviously it's a satire of Hollywood and you would expect Hollywood people to show up. But like, I never knew Martin Scorsese was such a funny actor, to be honest with you, and he was absolutely brilliant in the two scenes I've seen with him. And like, all in, I thought that what we're seeing clearly here is the emergence of this really funny, beloved, dare I say, Veep-esque comedy.
Right.
And like, listen, you know, Jeremy Allen White, you've lost your Emmy, I'd say, next year, to be honest with you.
Oh, dear. Does it have something to say about, like, this is a studio in decline somewhat, and so is it kind of making a comment about this entire you know, system is breaking down a little bit.
I mean, there's no point denying the fact that there's a joke very much at the expense of Apple TV and streamers at the end, I think, of one of the episodes that has streamed so far, which is all about, I should have just sold this to Apple, you know. Yeah. Like, it's very much aware of that industry. I mean, people aren't going to the cinema. I think it's holding relatively firm in Ireland compared to other markets, but, like, what's the Irish market? The global box office? Yeah. Nothing. But, like, obviously...
Apparently Iceland.
Yeah, I knew that too.
Yeah. Weird. But it's dark and rainy. What else are you going to do?
Exactly. Yeah. And, like, your own, you know, basically, why not, right? But, like, all in, definitely it is acknowledging, you know, it is poking fun at Hollywood and the whole show business. I mean, there's a very famous show, like, Hollywood podcast. It's called something, might be called Hollywood with Matt Bellany, anyway, and he features as a cameo himself on a podcast in the opening episode when Seth Rogen is driving around in the car. So this is definitely poking fun at itself, but coming at a time when the industry is going through some sort of reckoning of what is our future, which I guess is rife for comedy.
Yeah.
Say.
Okay, that's interesting. Right, our second show is called The Change. You can stream seasons 1 and 2 now on Channel 4. Here's a clip.
How are you, Linda?
Oh, yeah, okay. There's just a couple of niggly little things that I wanted to talk to you about.
Well, I can only address one issue per appointment.
I think you might have early onset dementia, osteoporosis, ringing in my ears when I'm stressed, anxiety, depression, cardiovascular disease, and a strange mental disorder involving loss of nouns.
Well, that's quite a list. And you're 50 now. Yeah. How are your moods?
Fine. How are yours?
Right, so the change is the change.
The change is the change and many other changes as well. But the fundamental change that, you know, that Bridget Christie, the creator, goes through at the age of 50, shall we say, the menopause. And this, you know, I wasn't that familiar with Bridget Christie as a comedian before I saw her on Taskmaster, to be honest with you, which is a backdoor introduction. That's why people do Taskmaster. You know, not only, I'd say, is it really fun, but, like, it's undoubtedly a huge boost to your career and gets you into Channel 4. And she is a stand-up comedian who probably I should have known. She won whatever the, you know, what was once the Perrier Award and is now, I think, the Edinburgh Comedy Award, but the Edinburgh Festival Award, shall we say. She won that in the early 2000s and was a very successful stand-up comedian and had many, many radio shows and had gone to drama school and kind of dipped her foot into various different things, but wrote this sitcom herself. And it was something that I missed in 2023 when it was out, but it was this very, like, cult sitcom of the time, and now that it's returned, I wanted to give it a go. Now, I'm going to be totally straightforward and say, like, it has absolutely acclaimed reviews, and it took me a long time to warm to it. And I would say, like, you know, I have warmed to it, but it wasn't that immediate love, ha ha ha. Because, like, I will say, look, it's not a sitcom that's miserable.
Yeah. I mean, okay, it's an actual sitcom.
It's an actual sitcom, but there are jokes to it, but it's not like laugh out loud, ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
Completely not. So she plays Linder, who on her 50th birthday basically starts going through menopause and is sick and tired of being the hapless wife and mother in her household and has kept a ledger of every household chore she's ever done in her marriage and has decided that all of this time has accumulated in her favour. So now she is left and is going to go off and re-explore her roots in the Forest of Dean. And it's like she goes to, you know, Stars Hollow from the Gilmore Girls, this kind of quaint, quirky town full of unusual but well-meaning people. If that was set in Royston Vasey from The League of Gentlemen, right?
Like, okay, well, that's darker.
Like, it's cutesy, quirky, but with this undercurrent of menace maybe going through it and kind of a weird vibe going on. There's really kind of funny throwaway scenes involving her kind of this friendship she strikes up with Paul Whitehouse, who kind of only appears in one scene per episode. He plays Tony, this kind of lecherous guy in the pub who tries to chat her up and she shoots him down. But then they have this kind of warm banter back and forth. But the other kind of co-stars would be Monica Dolan, Susan Lynch, Jim Howick, who's that guy from Sex Education and that guy from Ghosts, that guy you've seen from everything you've ever seen. He plays the Verderer, who I had to look up what that means. It's like the person who was tasked by royalty to look after a forest.
Okay.
It's a sitcom about this woman going through a change, but it's really about womanhood, femininity, naturalism, nature, life, family life, respect, all these kind of weighty woke themes. And there is no denying that this like is woke TV, right? But like, I also found it very sensitive in its approach of things. It's not judgmental. Even the characters who are kind of played for the kind of vaguely, you know,
dodgy
or sorts are given moments of pathos and humanity and humor and jokes. And it's funny, and it's a bit like The Wicker Man meets, I don't know, the Vagina Monologues or something, right? But like, but, and yet I liked it, but it took me a long time to kind of vibe with it because I just found it so odd at the beginning.
Yeah. And like, she leaves, like, I assume her kids are kind of grown up or in the original family setting. So, but she decamps from the house completely and you never see them again. Is that
so? You very, very infrequently see her older teenage, maybe young adult children. It's not quite clear how old they are. Her husband, played by Omid Jalili, he is flashed back to constantly as being completely and utterly hapless. We get word from him going like, where's the toilet paper? Where are the towels? What am I doing? Like, he, you know, we see him as the fruit of his non-labors, shall we say, coming into harvest and how he cannot deal with this. But yeah, it's back now for its second run. My understanding is like it's this cult sitcom that is growing and growing and growing. It ended on a slight cliffhanger in the first season. The second one ends up on a slight cliffhanger as well. So they are obviously hoping to make slightly more of this, but obviously that only happens if people watch it.
Our third show is Mid-Century Modern. You can stream all of season one now on Disney Plus. Here's a clip.
Welcome, boys.
I always forget how big this place is.
Yes. It's not home, but it's much.
All this from selling bras.
As of next month, we'll have a Bunny Hutch store in 31 states. As long as there's women who wear bras and husbands who wear them when no one's home.
Gay golden girls?
Basically, right? Golden gays. Right. Now, it's so... So it's from... the creators are Max Muchnick, what a name, and David Cohn, whose biggest hit to date is Will and Grace, right? And Will and Grace is basically this, except in the 90s, very late, I think 99, Will and Grace debuted. And, you know, it wrapped up its run somewhat recently after a revival, despite, I believe, all the cast pretty much hating each other, which is very Golden Girls-y. I think they all hated each other as well, right? But Will and Grace ran for nearly 250 episodes. So these guys, you know, they know what they're doing when it comes to that kind of situational comedy. So here we have Nathan Lane as Bunny Schneiderman, Matt Bomer as Jerry Frank, and Nathan Lee Graham, who's more of a Broadway actor, as Arthur Broussard, who are a bunch of three friends who reunite at their fourth friend's funeral and decide, instead of being sad and miserable alone, they'll be sad and miserable together and all move into a house in Palm Springs. And if that all sounds like Golden Girls missing the mother, well, one of their mothers is there. She's played by Linda Lavin, Sybil Schneiderman. Now, she actually passed away after filming 7 episodes of show of the 10-episode season. And they will have to figure out what, where, you know, where they're going if they want a kind of acerbic motherly type. I'm sure a grandaunt can be pulled out of the writer's room in some shape or capacity. Now, this is a very old-fashioned sitcom. You know, it is like multi-camera, laugh track, bawdy, obvious, straightforward jokes. And in a market like this, it's very hard for a sitcom like that to make it. Because in the past, you didn't have much variety. Like, there were a limited number of channels, so you were watching what you wanted to watch. And American sitcoms had like 22, 24 episodes. And I always think with a sitcom, it's your familiarity with the you know, the cast and the characters that kind of lends itself to finding it charming and funny.
Yeah.
Whereas in this kind of modern streaming schedule of 10 episodes, it's much harder to break through for a classic laugh track sitcom, shall we say. It reminded me a lot of like 2.5 Men, and I mean that in every sense of the word, right? Like 2.5 jokes per episode that I'm kind of chuckling at and the rest of it, and they're like, yeah, grand. But look, The Change is a challenging woke sitcom about environmentalism and womanhood. The Studio is on a streamer you have to pay an awful lot of money for, and like is full of, you know, every episode clearly cost millions and millions of dollars. This is a straight-laced, straightforward gay sitcom. and it's fine. Yeah. Like, it's not gonna like, you know, I don't think it's gonna run for the same amount of time as the Golden Girls. And to be honest, if you just want to watch the Golden Girls, that's also on Disney Plus for all whatever 200 episodes of it. But like, this is, you know, I don't want to damn it, but it's just fine.
Yeah. Actually, in retrospect, The Golden Girls was kind of like, it sounds like it was written by a load of gay men anyway. So. Right, so those three shows are The Studio, new episodes every Wednesday on Apple TV+, The Change, you can stream season 1 and 2 on Channel 4, and Mid-Century Modern, stream all of season 1 now on Disney+. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.